Chapter 50. Mr. Edigan forgave the coldness of his bride's manner during and after the wedding ceremony, full well aware that there had been considerable reluctance on her part to acquiesce in this neighborly arrangement, and, as a philosopher of long standing, holding that whatever Baptista's attitude now, the conditions would probably be much the same 6 months hence as those which ruled among other married couples. An absolutely unexpected shock was given to Baptista's listless mind about an hour after the wedding service. They had nearly finished the midday dinner when the now husband said to her father, "We think of starting about 2. And the breeze being so fair, we shall bring up inside Pen Zephyr New Pier about 6 at least." What are we going to Pen Zephyr? Said Baptista. "I don't know anything of it."
Didn't you tell her?
Asked her father of Edigan. It transpired that, owing to the delay in her arrival, this proposal too, among other things, had in the hurry not been mentioned to her, except some time ago as a general suggestion, that they would go somewhere. Edigan had imagined that any trip would be pleasant, and one to the mainland the pleasantest of all. She looked so distressed at the announcement, that her husband willingly offered to give it up, though he had not had a holiday off the island for a whole year. Then she pondered on the inconvenience of staying at Giant's Town, where all the inhabitants were bonded, by the circumstances of their situation, into a sort of family party, which permitted and encouraged on such occasions as these oral criticism, that was apt to disturb the equanimity of newly married girls, and would especially worry Baptista in her strange situation. Hence, unexpectedly, she agreed not to disorganize her husband's plans for the wedding jaunt, and it was settled that, as originally intended, they should proceed in a neighbor's sailing boat to the metropolis of the district. In this way they arrived at Pen Zephyr without difficulty or mishap. Bidding adieu to Jenkin and his man, who had sailed them over, they strolled arm in arm off the pier, Baptista silent, cold, and obedient. Edigan had arranged to take her as far as Plymouth before their return, but to go no further than where they had landed that day. Their first business was to find an inn, and in this, they had unexpected difficulty, since for some reason or other, possibly the fine weather, many of the nearest at hand were full of tourists and commercial travelers. He led her until he reached a tavern which, though comparatively unpretending, stood in as attractive a spot as any in the town, and this, somewhat to their surprise after their previous experience, they found apparently empty. The considerate old man, thinking that Baptista was educated to artistic notions, though he himself was deficient in them, had decided that it was most desirable to have, on such an occasion as the present, an apartment with a good view, the expression being one he had often heard in use among tourists, and he therefore asked for a favorite room on the first floor, from which a bow window protruded, for the express purpose of affording such an outlook. The landlady, after some hesitation, said she was sorry that particular apartment was engaged. The next one, however, or any other in the house, was unoccupied. "The gentleman who has the best one will give it up tomorrow, and then you can change into it," she added, as Mr. Edigan hesitated about taking the adjoining and less commanding one. "We shall be gone tomorrow, and shan't want it," he said. Wishing not to lose customers, the landlady earnestly continued that, since he was bent on having the best room, perhaps the other gentleman would not object to move at once into the one they despised, since, though nothing could be seen from the window, the room was equally large. "Well, if he doesn't care for a view," said Mr. Edigan, with the air of a highly artistic man who did. "Oh no, I am sure he doesn't," she said. "I can promise that you shall have the room you want. If you would not object to go for a walk for half an hour, I could have it ready, and your things in it, and a nice tea laid in the bow window by the time you come back. ... This proposal was deemed satisfactory by the fussy old tradesman, and they went out. Baptista nervously conducted him in an opposite direction to her walk of the former day in other company, showing on her wan face, had he observed it, how much she was beginning to regret her sacrificial step for mending matters that morning. She took advantage of a moment when her husband's back was turned to inquire casually in a shop if anything had been heard of the gentleman who was sucked down in the Yeti while bathing. The shopman said, "Yes, his body has been washed ashore," and had just handed Baptista a newspaper on which she discerned the heading, "A schoolmaster drowned while bathing," when her husband turned to join her. She might have pursued the subject without raising suspicion, but it was more than flesh and blood could do, and completing a small purchase almost ran out of the shop. "What is your terrible hurry, me dear?" said Hedigan, hastening after. "I don't know, I don't want to stay in shops," she gasped. "And we won't," he said. "They are suffocating this weather. Let's go back and have some tea." They found the much-desired apartment awaiting their entry. It was a sort of combination bed and sitting room, and the table was prettily spread with high tea in the bow window, a bunch of flowers in the midst, and a best parlor chair on each side. Here they shared the meal by the ruddy light of the vanishing sun. But though the view had been engaged, regardless of expense, exclusively for Baptista's pleasure, she did not direct any keen attention out of the window. Her gaze as often fell on the floor and walls of the room as elsewhere, and on the table as much as on either, beholding nothing at all. But there was a change. Opposite her seat was the door, upon which her eyes presently became riveted like those of a little bird upon a snake. For, on a peg at the back of the door, there hung a hat, such a hat surely, from its peculiar make, the actual hat that had been worn by Charles. Conviction grew to certainty when she saw a railway ticket sticking up from the band. Charles had put the ticket there as he had noticed the act. Her teeth almost chattered. She murmured something incoherent. Her husband jumped up and said, "You are not well. What is it? What shall I get thee?" Smelling salts. She said, quickly and desperately, "At that chemist's shop you were in just now." He jumped up like the anxious old man that he was, caught up his own hat from a back table, and without observing the other hastened out and downstairs. Left alone, she gazed and gazed at the back of the door, then spasmodically rang the bell. An honest-looking country maid servant appeared in response. "A hat," murmured Baptista, pointing with her finger. "It does not belong to us." "Oh yes, I'll take it away," said the young woman with some hurry. "It belongs to the other gentleman." She spoke with a certain awkwardness, and took the hat out of the room. Baptista had recovered her outward composure. "The other gentleman?" she said. "Where is the other gentleman?" "He's in the next room, ma'am. He removed out of this to oblige ye." "How can you say so? I should hear him, if he were there," said Baptista, sufficiently recovered to argue down an apparent untruth. "He's there," said the girl, heartily. "Then it is strange that he makes no noise," said Mrs. Hedigan, convicting the girl of falsity by a look. "He makes no noise, but it is not strange," said the servant. All at once a dread took possession of the bride's heart, like a cold hand laid thereon, for it flashed upon her that there was a possibility of reconciling the girl's statement with her own knowledge of facts. "Why does he make no noise?" she weakly said. The waiting maid was silent, and looked at her questioner. "If I tell you, ma'am, you won't tell Miss Sis?" she whispered. Baptista promised. Because he's a lying dead. ' said the girl. He's the schoolmaster that was drowned yesterday. ' said the bride, covering her eyes. Then he was in this room till just now? ' Yes, said the maid, thinking the young lady's agitation natural enough. And I told Miss Sis that I thought she oughtn't to have done it, because I don't hold it right to keep visitors so much in the dark where death's concerned. But she said the gentleman didn't die of anything infectious. She was a poor, honest, innkeeper's wife, she says, who had to get her living by making hay while the sun sheened. And owing to the drowned gentleman being brought here, she said, it kept so many people away that we were empty, though all the other houses were full. So when your good man set his mind upon the room, and she would have lost good paying folk if he'd not had it, it wasn't to be supposed, she said, that she'd let anything stand in the way. He won't say that I've told ye please, ' All the linen has been changed, and as the inkist won't be till tomorrow, after you are gone, she thought you wouldn't know a word of it, being strangers here. ' The returning footsteps of her husband broke off further narration. Baptista waved her hand, for she could not speak. The waiting maid quickly withdrew, and Mr. Hedigan entered with the smelling salts and other nostrums. Any better? He questioned. I don't like the hotel, she exclaimed, almost simultaneously. I can't bear it, it doesn't suit me. Is that all that's the matter? He returned pettishly, this being the first time of his showing such a mood. Upon my heart and life, such trifling is trying to any man's temper, Baptista. Sending me about from here to yond, and then when I come back saying ye don't like the place, that I have sunk so much money and words to get for ye. Ah, dang it all, 'tis enough to, but I won't say any more at present, me dear, though it is just too much to expect to turn out of the house now. We shan't get another quiet place at this time of the evening. Every other inn in the town is bustling with rackety folk of one sort and t'other, while here 'tis as quiet as the grave. The country, I would say. So bide still, d'ye hear, and tomorrow we shall be out of the town altogether as early as you like. The obstinacy of age had, in short, overmastered its complaisance, and the young woman said no more. The simple course of telling him that in the adjoining room lay a corpse which had lately occupied their own might, it would have seemed, have been an effectual one without further disclosure, but to allude to that subject, however it was disguised, was more than Edigan's young wife had strength for. Horror broke her down. In the contingency, one thing only presented itself to her paralyzed regard: that here she was doomed to abide, in a hideous contiguity to the dead husband and the living, and her conjecture did, in fact, bear itself out. That night she lay between the two men as he had married Hedigan on the one hand, and on the other through the partition against which the bed stood, Charles Stowe. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.